Okay, now it gives me great pleasure to introduce Yvonne to Santa Maria.
All right.
My name is Yvonne. I'm an alcoholic. I get to say because I have a fucked up knee. I thought I offered myself to thee, to do with thee. Okay, so, my name is Juan. I'm an alcoholic. I was born February 6th, 1968. My alcoholism runs in my family. My father was an alcoholic and an addict, and both of his parents were alcoholic, and they both died of alcoholic death. My earliest recollection of drinking was around 5 or 6 years of age. My grandmother would give me little shots of creme de menthe after dinner when I would stay with her on the weekend. And that was so that I would go to sleep. She ended up dying of cirrhosis of the liver when I was about 10. I grew up in a very volatile environment. My dad was a Vietnam vet, and he came back with severe PTSD, and he self-medicated with drugs and alcohol. Living with him was like walking on needles. He was very verbally abusive, emotionally abusive, physically abusive. My grandmother started getting sick right around when I was about 8 or 9 years old. So my father's an only child. I'm an only child. And then my mother is the youngest of three and the only girl. So when my grandmother started getting sick, I was made to stay like every weekend and all my holidays, Easter holiday, Christmas, Thanksgiving, taking care of her. The money that she did have, it all went to the visiting nurses, and it all went. So then it had to go to the family to take care of her. And here I was, 8 or 9 years old, doing adult things like, you know, caring for my grandmother's wounds and making meals and just doing things that adult things. So I never really had much of a childhood. When I was about 12 or 13, my father taught me how to roll my first joint. I am an alcoholic that does a lot of drugs. Drugs is a huge part of my story. But alcohol has been my gateway to eventually putting needles in my body. So that was his demise. I mean, teaching me how to roll joints was his demise, because I ended up, you know, stealing his weed, rolling joints, and I learned really young that when I took weed to school, you know, I had to take roll the joints to take it to school. I had like there was power in that, right? People, I was able to trade this and that, I don't know. I was always popular. I was one of those kids that. All I had to do was show up in class and then we get an A. I never really had to try when I was younger. It just kind of came naturally. After I got here, I tried going and taking classes at Hancock and I struggled. It's crazy. It's crazy how drugs and alcohol affected my ability to, my brain. I spent at least 23 years consciously entertaining my disease, I should say. I started using drugs at the age of 13, smoking pot and drinking and pills. I like pills, like Robin Egg Speed, Robin Egg, Black Beauties, all that stuff. At age 15, I started slamming cocaine and crank. And I got here at the age of 37. I got here, For a really long time, I was just a weekend warrior. That's I guess that's how long I was able to stay in my disease for so long, is because I was just a weekend warrior. Fridays I was partying, and come Saturday night, Sunday morning, it would stop. I would rest, and Monday, go back to work. Then it got to be where things changed. So right before I got here, for about 5 years before I got here, my disease really kicked in, and it kicked in bad. Alcohol and drugs were my higher power. They dictated when I could eat, when I could sleep, when I could do anything. I could not do anything without the aid of alcohol and drugs. I was hopeless. I was helpless. I was desperate. I know I'm kind of jumping around right here, but at the age of 16, on my 16th birthday, I tried to commit suicide because the environment that I grew up in, I was made to feel like I was a burden. So I spent a lot of time hiding under the bed and in the closet, trying to avoid getting beaten. And I would pray and I would ask God, why am I here? Why? And at the age of 16, I tried to kill myself for the first time. And when I didn't succeed, I got really pissed off and I ran away from home instead. And so I ran away from home several different times. Then I tried to kill myself again on my 21st birthday. And growing up, my parents, I lived, before I got here, I lived my life for other people, meaning that, like, when I was growing up, my dad wanted me to become a doctor or a lawyer or something, but yet I grew up in the fucking ghetto. So anyway, my dad wanted me to be successful, a doctor or a lawyer, and instead, on my 21st birthday, I tried to kill myself again, and since that didn't succeed, I went and I found myself the most shitbag drug dealer that I could find in Santa Maria, and I married them, had a kid. Married them, had a kid. Because that's what you do to parents, to piss off your parents, you just, marry a fucking scumbag. that lasted 5 years. I couldn't deal with it anymore. Over the course of the years, I didn't really have relationships. I took hostages. Mm. When I got here, I was 37. I had gotten arrested, and I was court ordered in a detox. And back in 2005, okay, I got here for the first time in October of 2005. And I was court ordered to detox. And back then, in 2005, drug court and Prop 36 was ran by Judge Flores. They were 18-month programs, and you spent 21 days in detox. And in those 21 days, you went to something like 98 meetings in 21 days. They really shoved it down your throat. For the first 2 weeks in detox, all I could do was sit in the corner and sleep, because I hadn't slept in about 6 years. Right? Wired all the time. Wired all the time. So I got here from jail, court ordered, was here for... getting back to that. All right. So then I finished my program, and I was coming. I came to meetings like for the first 6 years. So from 2005 until 2012. I came to at least one, sometimes more. In the very beginning, I was coming to three meetings a day, every day. But for the first 6 years, I came to at least one meeting a day, every day. The first time I relapsed was my father passed away in December 29th of 2007. and I was fucking pissed. I caught a resentment against God because how dare he? I had been clean and sober and in the program for about 2.5 years. And I had a resentment against God because I was hoping that, see, in my mind, in my eyes, I was thinking that I'm doing so well that hopefully, this is the program of attraction, not promotion, right? So I was hoping that what was working, what I was doing here was working to the degree where it would be a light for my dad. And I was hoping that he would want a better life than the life that he was living. My father stopped self-medicating himself when I was about, well, okay, so my dad drank and used drugs a lot up until I was about 15 or so. And then he stopped drinking, and then he just went on marijuana maintenance till this day he died. But I was hoping that for the last 2 years of his life that he would come follow me into here and get right. There was a time back in 2000 where some things happened and my dad had to go to drug diversion and he had to abstain for like 6 months, and I saw this really small scope of a man that I always wanted to be my sister, and he was so critical 6 months, and then as soon as he was done with his program, he went right back to smoking weed and being the asshole that he's always been. And I was hoping that when I came here that he was attracted to him, or he would want to come back and try again, and it didn't work. God took him, and I caught a resentment, and I stopped going to meetings because I thought, well, you know, I was going to 3 meetings a day every day, and my mom needs me now because my dad passed away, and so I stopped going to meetings, it was about a year, and I finally just said fuck it, and I relapsed. Thank you. That relapse ended. That relapse lasted like 2 or 3 months, and it ended with me. I had a rope, and I was heading to a tree, and I was going to hang myself. My mother caught me, and she called 911. And so I have the paramedics, and I have the police, and so I have a choice. I can either go to jail, or I can go to the hospital. So I went to the hospital. Because I'd already been to jail and I didn't really fucking like that shit. I'm not too crazy about the fucking green bologna. Right? Right? So I went to the hospital and they put me in the funny farm for about a week. And so then I came right back, and again I was doing three meetings a day at least every day. And so I had about 3 years and 3 months the first time when I first relapsed, and then I came back and I got another 3 years under my belt, and it was weird because this last time that I relapsed, it was almost opposite of what you normally hear. Because normally you hear when people relapse, oh, I stopped going to meetings, I stopped doing this. And that was the deal the first time I relapsed. But the last time I relapsed, I had too much on my plate. I had a lot of sponsees. I had a commitment for the Golden Group. I had a commitment for the Valley Group. I had a commitment to the Lono Club. I had several sponsees. I had, my plate was just too full. And shit kind of just came around the corner, and next thing I know, I'm sticking needles in my body. And that lasted a weekend, and I accidentally I almost accidentally overdosed, because my system had been so clean for so long, I just couldn't do what I used to do. And I thought my heart was going to explode. So I've kind of experienced a little bit of everything here. I got here first time from jail, and then I tried to commit suicide, and they put me in a funny farm, so there's an institution. And then the last time I relapsed, I almost died. And the real eye opener the last time was not only did I experience a near death experience, but when I came back, it was like 4 other people that went out that same month. And out of those other people, I think I'm the only one that's still here. Everybody else went to their funeral. So the door doesn't always swing both ways. Sometimes you see people, they come in and out. I'm done. I may have one more relapse in me, but I do not have another recovery. I will, without a doubt, die if I go back out. I know that my gift is a recovery. I mean, my recovery is a gift. So in detox, I hadn't slept for like 5 years, so when I finally got to detox, I slept, right? And they brought us to fucking meetings morning, noon, and night, and I would sit in the corner against the wall and people would sit next to me nudging and, hey, you're snoring. I'm like, I haven't slept in 5 years, what the fuck is this? When I finally was able to stay awake in a meeting, I heard things. I heard, get a sponsor, work the steps, and when you get a sponsor, find someone that has at least 10 or more years of continuous sobriety and is actively working, has an active working knowledge of the steps and the traditions and the principles. And so I kind of started paying attention and looking and watching people who was talking the talk and walking the walk, or who was just talking the talk and then going out there and doing something else. Because if you stay long enough and you pay attention hard enough, you'll see people that talk out of the fucking side of their neck, and then you will see people who actually walk the walk. I went to a lot of book study meetings, depth study meetings, women's meetings, and for the first 6 years that I was here, I came in my fucking pajamas morning, noon, and night. I didn't give a fuck, right? I wasn't here. I wasn't here to find my next ex. I wasn't here to make a fashion statement. I was here to save my fucking ass, because I was told that I cannot save my face and my ass at the same time, and that I better save my ass. I came here in pajamas. When I got here, I knew that my fucking picker was broke, because when I was old enough to start having relationships of my own, I was picking men who were like my dad, right? They were alcoholics, they were addicts, they were verbally abusive, physically abusive. It was just this fucking vicious cycle, because I didn't know any better. I did not know any different. When I got here, I wanted something different. I had a really good understanding that my picker was fucking broke. And so for 6 years, I really focused on me. You know, this is where I wanted to be. I wanted to find out who I was. And I got to learn about myself. I got to learn how to have healthy relationships by being intimate with my sponsor and my sponsees, and that's not in a sexual way. Intimacy is not a sexual thing. It's not. It's about being able to be vulnerable to someone, and people. When you sponsor somebody, or when you have a sponsor, whatever, when people share their deep, dark shit with you, keep it with you. Do not spread that shit around. It's very ugly. I've had to learn my lesson with that too. You know, they say trust is a must in this program, and it is. But I'm sicker than most, and I have to have professional care, and that's really saved me too, because I know with the professional, what I say there really truly does stay there. But I'm really good when it comes to my sponsees. When they tell me things, it doesn't leave, it does not leave here. It's not to say that, like, if we took all of our shit to it in another room, we wouldn't be able to tell whose shit was what because it all looked the fucking same. But still, you know, I mean, if you tell somebody, well, I was raised when I was little, you know, some things you just don't, you know, it's hard enough for you to grow the balls to actually say it, but then once you say it, to have someone fucking repeat it everywhere, it just kind of crushes you. This is a program of ego deflation. So you gotta check your fucking ego at the door. That's for damn sure. What else? Okay, so let me get into the steps. So I got a sponsor and right away, and I started working the steps. And step one, I admit that I am powerless over alcohol. That was a little more difficult for me because I said the drugs are a huge part of my story, but I've come to realize and understand that drugs have been a gateway to other things, and I am an alcoholic, and my life is unmanageable anytime and every time I try to manage it, and I am powerless over people, places, and situations. And it was like someone said about, you know, put your arms out like this and draw a circle around yourself, and everything inside that circle is your fucking business. And everything outside of it is none of your fucking business. And just to stay out of it. And that's helped me a lot. It's helped me a lot. I had to learn how to have a higher power, because before I got here, my higher power was drug and alcohol. Like I said, it told me when I could do things. It dominated my life. I made the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of a God that I could understand. And I had to come to understand that my God, he's loving, gentle, and kind, and forgiving. And I had to learn how to love and forgive myself. I did not have the ability to love and forgive other people until I could learn how to love and forgive myself. And you guys loved me until I could love myself. And I was, when I got here, I was very angry, very. Very angry, very empty. Definitely, I was definitely searching for something to fill the hole in my soul, mm-hmm. and I knew that relationships and things weren't the answer. I the solution is a spiritual one. It's not a religious program; it's a spiritual one. Religion is for people who are afraid to go to hell, and spirituality is for those who have been to hell and don't want to go back.
Yeah,
right. Then I made that search and fill this through this inventory of myself, and I've been lucky to be able to stand back and look at my part in things, because I have a part in everything that happened. Yes, I was a victim as a child, but as I started growing up and making my own decisions, that's where it is there. I made decisions too. I have a part in it, and I had to look at why I did what I did, and what I could do instead, you know, and then step five, the admitting to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. This is where I was talking about with the, you know, the sponsee deal. You know, when you share your deep dark shit with someone else, and they share it with you, keep it with you. I was ready to have God remove all the defects of my character that I was ready to let go of that time. There are still a couple of character defects that I'm holding on to. You know, I kind of like them still. There's still a couple of them. I haven't ready to get that shit up yet. And I humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings. And I've made my amends, and step eight, or step nine, where we make the direct amends. I remember I worked for a doctor, I worked for a veterinarian, and I drugs and alcohol ruined my career. I had a great career as a veterinary assistant, and I ruined it, and I humbled myself, and I went to the doctor, and I made my amends to him, and he just gave me a big hug, and he says, just keep doing what you're doing, you know. There has been so much freedom, so much weight has been lifted off of me. The more I work the steps and the more I apply the steps, the bigger the light shines, the brighter the light shines inside. I don't have a cold, dark, heavy heart anymore. Okay, so then around, 3 years ago, I finally thought I was ready for, if you want to know if you're practicing spiritual principles or if you really want to know how program is strong is, you know, how strong your program is, get into a fucking relationship. Right? Get into a relationship and it'll test your program, for sure. But it's great. I finally got into a relationship, and I'm happy. I'm very happy. I found my mate, my soulmate, and we walked this path together. I have something that I want to read real fast. And this is about the spiritual principles that are behind the steps. So it says the 12 principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. There are principles which correspond to each of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Part of step 12 is that we practice these principles in all of our affairs. So it's important to know what they are. This is an effort to expand on the meaning of the principles of the 12 steps. These are the principles that are incorporated into our daily lives as we walk the walk. Employing each of these behaviors will help to rebuild a life of increased self-esteem, self-confidence, and recovery. Here are the action principles behind the 12 steps. So the first one is honesty. It is vital to concede that we are alcoholics if we are to achieve sobriety. The odds are against us if we don't completely admit defeat and surrender. This takes being truthful with ourselves. The alcoholic cannot differentiate the truth from the false. By learning to be honest with ourselves and admit an honest desire to be sober, we begin a spiritual program of action. And the second is the one behind step two, is hope. In order to engage in a course of alcoholism recovery, we must have hope of success. If there is no hope, why try? We have not been able to stay sober on our own, and the desperation we feel when we enter AA is overwhelming. A way to instill hope is to realize recovery is not a question of ability, but rather a desire to stay sober. Seeing others recover and live free of alcohol brings hope. And you know, that's another thing, when I came, you guys were laughing. I don't know if anybody noticed that when you walked in today, but there's people talking and laughing and all this shit, and you're like, wow, what the fuck are these people on? I want some of that. Then step three is faith. The decision step to go on with 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous asks that we step out on faith. It is only a matter of being willing to believe. Through the process of the 12 steps, that belief turns into faith. We carry this faith into the rest of the steps by being willing to believe. We must begin to have faith it will work. And you know, my sponsor told me that too, because like I said, my higher power was drugs and alcohol, and she says she said just believe that I believe. You know, and I said, well, okay. And she says, there is a God, and you're not it. And if you have faith in God and trust in the process, your life will be better. And you know, my life, first life gets different, and then it gets better. Four is courage. Step four is about courage. This step is really about courage to honestly look at ourselves. Take a look at how our behavior has become warped to justify our continued behavior. We are here to take an honest assessment of ourselves. Looking at causes and conditions of our alcoholic behavior can be scary. For those of you that can actually remember what we've done. Step five is about integrity. If we have truly done a thorough job of introspection and evaluation of our assets and shortcomings, do we have the integrity to own up to it? It can be very difficult to be open and honest about our past behaviors. We begin to learn to do the right thing even though no one is watching. Step six is about willingness. Now that we have accomplished an inventory of the good and not so good aspects of our character and behavior, are we willing to change them, all of them? The important part in this 12-step principle is the willingness to let go of old behaviors and rely on our higher power. Step seven is about humility. Here we move further into action. We have seen in step five where we have been selfish and self-centered. We practice being humble by realizing that we are not the center of the universe. Right? There is a God and I'm not fucking it. We are all simply small parts of a huge whole. To be human is to make mistakes. Hopefully our journey has led us to the point where we can readily admit mistakes and accept ourselves for being imperfect. We are asking for help and forgiving ourselves. And, I admit that I'm still a continuing student at the University of Hard Knocks. Okay, step eight is about brotherly love. While we are preparing a list of those to whom we owe amends, it becomes time for the golden rule. It is important to begin treating others as we wish to be treated. We must also learn not to judge others, but accept them for who they are, not our vision of who they should be. Step nine is about discipline. We are continuing to remove the barriers that can block forward sober growth. We are getting ready to sweep our side of the street clean. We are learning to become accountable while making amends to those people we have harmed. We are practicing new behaviors by facing our wrongs, so it is important to have this self-discipline. We are trying to correct our wrongs through action, not just words. We stay close to our sponsor during each amends to stay focused and disciplined. Yeah, because saying sorry just doesn't cut it. I mean, our family has heard us say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. You know, don't be sorry, be better. And just try harder, just try something different. Step 10 is about perseverance. We have entered the world of the spirit and strive to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This takes practice and means we have to keep on keeping on. We are beginning to trudge the road of happy destiny, and this takes diligence. Step 11, spiritual awareness. Step 11 suggests that we continue to improve our conscious contact with our higher power, so we tap into that power through prayer and meditation. We become cognizant of the blessings we are receiving in our new life. We are learning to notice His handiwork in all aspects of our life. And step 12 is about service. Having experienced a psychic change that keeps us sober one day at a time, we are empowered to demonstrate the new principles by which we live. We remain in action in our daily life through example. We seek out and are available to help others in need. We continue to carry the message of hope and recovery. We strive to help wherever we can, even in the smallest, simplest tasks of life. And, you know, I didn't really want to speak tonight, but, stage fright. So, like, I've been staring at the wall instead of looking at you people, because as soon as I see all of you looking at me, I go, what the fuck are you looking at? Because my head goes off. People have been asking me if I was nervous, and I'm like, no, I'm not nervous. I just got lots of shit going off in my head, you know, about what I want to say and how I want to say it, and I just, I'm like, don't let me drink coffee, don't let me eat sugar, and I'll be all right. So, I don't know, I hope that I've, I'm pretty sure that I've identified, you know, you guys, I hope you guys can relate. I don't know, I'm grateful. My life is blessed today. You know, like I said, about 3 years ago, I got into a relationship. And the first one, my first sober relationship. And that person's in the program. And Valentine's Day, this last Valentine's Day, we got married. So from the time that I got divorced until the time I got remarried, it was like an 18-year period of where I, you know, well, I mean, I went through a lot of hostages. I took a lot of hostages in that time, but I never decided to throw them all back, right? Because they were just, you know, they were just there. When I get tired of them, I can go in there. You know, I was given the gift of desperation when I came here. I was very broken and very desperate. I know I was dying to live and living to die. I was just a mess. You guys gave me hope. The steps gave me tools. The steps are my tools. They taught me how to live life on life's terms without the use of drugs and alcohol, and without having to be violent and dysfunctional. I lost my father when I was here, and then what was it? A couple of years ago? Was it last year? The year before? My daughter, who is now 24, I think she was like 21 at the time, she had her little binge that lasted about a year or so, and I walked through it. They say the third time's the charm, I've been here for 10 years, and my relapses have been very short, and as soon as the substance was gone, I was like, what the fuck was I doing? What did I do? Why did I do it? You know, and so I want to welcome all the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous. I want you to know that there is hope after dope and alcohol. I'm living proof. What else? I want to welcome back all the retreads. Just keep on trying. And I want you to know that the door doesn't always swing both ways. Sometimes you go out and you don't come back. We end up going to your funeral. This disease is deadly. It's fatal, and it's hereditary. From what I can see in my lineage, it's hereditary. Like I said, both my grandparents were alcoholics. My father literally died with a joint in his hand on December 29th, 2007. And I watched my daughter have a little fling with it for about a year. But I still kept coming to meetings, and I loved her through it. And I learned how to parent her. When I first got here, I started parenting her through guilt, and that didn't really work out too well because she kind of bulldozed me. So I had to learn how to have boundaries. How much longer? Can I stop now? I had a lot of shit to say. All right. Well, anyway. Thank you.
Let's give Vaughn another round of applause. Thank you, Yvonne, for speaking tonight, and the speaker will be available after the meeting to thank for speaking tonight. Also, thank you to everyone that has a commitment at this meeting. Paula for greeting, Kelly for coffee and cards, our readers and birthday person. And please stay for cake afterwards. And I'd like to ask Brett to close us out with Trinity prayer.
Thank you for the cake.